blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sangham Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabaha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo Prajna Paramita Hiridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassion and comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances. The precept of obedience to all good laws. The precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana, in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. O happy blessed day, O happy blessed place, O happy blessed time, O happy blessed path, O happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutiampi tatiampi sabha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness.
we are
grieving and suffering. If any suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If any suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
I had this new experience this week of going up against conditioning.
A new experience?
A neat experience.
A neat experience, okay.
This particular experience was a new experience.
A new neat experience.
So a week or two ago I talked about, I'm working on this 300 for 1,000 project. Mm-hmm. And so what conditioning wants me to say is it's kind of an art project. It's an art project.
An art project.
Yeah, and so I had taking these steps, and I was really happy with it, and then I took another step, and I was really unhappy with that other step, and I felt like I had ruined it, and the message was I'd ruined it, and it was tragedy, and forget it, and so, and then I had what came up was just sort of play with it for a while and see. So I put it aside for a couple of days, and I came back, and I looked at it, and I thought, if I play with it anymore, I'll ruin it, really ruin it. So I decided it was okay. And so I just proceed from there. So actually, that was the first step against conditioning.
So just to look at what had been created, and it sounds like in acceptance.
Yeah.
This is what was created.
This is it. So so then the next step in this process actually was to take it to be copied. Mm-hmm. And I just saw the value of having no story. Because if I got into the story at all, it was like, oh my God, you're going to take this public? You're going to go where somebody else can see it? You're going to have multiple copies made of this? But the next step was to have it copied. And so I just kind of blanked out the story and went to the copy shop.
Wow, just dropped the story and took the next step.
And then the copies didn't turn out well. And so then, you know, again, I could just hear it, you know, it's just hovering, like, it's, you know, it's not going to work, it's not going to work. And then I thought, well, there are copied on one kind of paper, which is not the kind of paper I want to use, and it didn't copy on the kind of paper I want to use. And so is there a way I can make the copies on the paper I don't want to use usable? Mm-hmm. So I thought, well, there are ways to play with that, and there are other copy shops. So I went to another copy shop. And what came out is better. Mm-hmm. It's not as good as I'd like it, but it's a lot better. So I think I maybe found my solution. But all the way through this, I mean, I just got how if it's just doing the next step, it's not personal.
Right.
And how what a challenge it is when something is, you know, arises from your own hands and mind and heart. What a challenge it is to get it that thing is not personal.
Right, to not take it personally because it came from this being.
Well, to get that it just came through this being.
Came through the being rather than.
Yeah. So that's where I am with the project. And then the next steps are really challenging logistical steps. And I can feel that on one side it feels like, they're going to be impossible. On the other side, it feels like this is really fun because it's really a challenge. So, you know, that's just where I am with this project. But boy, it's just, you know, and the story of God, you know, don't take this public, is the story that for 5 or 6 years has kept me from doing this. I had this idea years ago. Mm-hmm. And but this year, because of the challenge, you know, and the support, we're going for it. And so it's very fun, and it's also, you know, it makes the nerve endings tingle to do this.
And, you know, what I'm struck with as you talk about this is just the excitement over, we never know which direction life is going to take us in. And, you know, we can have a certain vision about how things are going to go and how they're going to turn out, which is rarely the way it goes.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you had an experience of just being in acceptance and taking the next step and taking the next step. And each step is, you know, just mm-hmm. just bringing you exactly where you need to be with the project.
Yeah, and it occurred to me when I went to the printer, too, it was not only a matter of somebody else seeing it, but that at that point I have to turn it over to somebody else to take the next step. Mm-hmm. And I'm, you know, I have to let it go and realize it's not going to come out exactly like the original,
yeah.
and somehow be okay with that. Yeah. That's sort of a challenge too.
Yeah, you just let it go and
yep.
see what happens.
See what happens. Yep.
Yeah. That's great.
It really shines a little light on these, you know, I have obsessive thinking problems, and I had one last night, and oftentimes there's a regular, when it's sort of like having a, it's like I've come to think of it as like I have the flu, mm-hmm. you know, like I have the mental flu, and like it needs a certain amount of care and attention, as if I had the real flu. So oftentimes I'm just battling it. Mm-hmm. I'm just battling it. Mm-hmm. Last night I was like, okay, spirit of inquiry, like let's see mm-hmm. how what happens with this. Like mm-hmm. how do I get into these situations?
That's, you know, just it was struck with how that turns it from one of resistance to acceptance.
Yeah.
And how that just opens the door.
Yeah. I mean, I might not sleep as much either way, mm-hmm. but at least this way, it really felt like I gave me something to do with it, you know, besides just be in the same relationship with it, which I always am, which is just trying to push against it, like trying to get out of it. And it was so funny, too, because I had... I was so thrilled yesterday. I had this like breakthrough with it. Like I was like, oh, I understand. It's like the bored teenager. Like that's the one that this obsessive mind is talking to. Like the, you know, that's who is interested in these stories. Mm-hmm. It's like this teenager who's just bored. Mm-hmm. And I can give her something to do. Mm-hmm. Like I can tend to her. I can read. There's so many other more interesting things to do than just watch this TV that I'm like, you know, like we don't have to, she doesn't have to sit in front of that TV. Mm-hmm. So huge breakthrough yesterday.
Huge breakthrough. Yeah.
And then it was the worst it had been last night than it has mm-hmm. in weeks. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, well, breakthroughs clearly don't mean anything.
Oh, are, you know, we can remember that when things get really tough that, you know, you hit upon something and that,
yeah.
you know, it sounds, you know, like you had, you took a stand for kindness mm-hmm. for this person.
Mm-hmm. And I guess in some ways, you know, the word, you know, it's been talked about before about backlash and, you know, that type of thing, but also, you know, now that I'm talking about it, it feels like what a great opportunity. Like, I had this breakthrough, and here, you know, it just gave me hours to come to.
Hours.
So I didn't do the, it just took me so much by surprise that I feel like all I could bring to it was spirit of inquiry, because what happens to me is okay, I'm going to sleep. And so that becomes like I can't get up. Like I feel like if I get up, then I'm disturbing like the, you know, any hope that I'm ever going to fall asleep in some ways. But then it sort of has me. And anyway, so that part of it I haven't quite gotten enough faith to deal because I can bring her out of bed and I, you know, if the four teenagers watching this, then we can do something else. But what I was able to do at least was like whenever it would start. I mean, I really had maybe only a few minutes of freedom from it before I finally just fell asleep from exhaustion. But in those minutes, it was like, okay, spirit of inquiry, like how am I getting into this? You know, like what is bringing me into it? And that felt like it brought hope to it in a way that I haven't felt in a while. It's, you know, I mean, I really want my relationship with this obsession. Obsessive thinking to change, and I feel like, I don't know, it did a little bit last mm-hmm. night.
So just as we've been talking about in the retreat this last week, you know, just bringing the spirit of inquiry to watch the process mm-hmm. that gets kicked in, and it sounds like there was somebody else also watching with some expected immediate results,
right.
But, you know, just to stay in that spirit of inquiry, and actually it sounds like you did, you learned some things
mm-hmm.
and saw some things, saw the bored teenager,
mm-hmm.
saw that there was an opportunity to provide her with different entertainment
mm-hmm.
than the same old tired, obsessive movie.
Mm-hmm.
And provided that care. And it sounds like you had actually a break then in that process.
Yeah.
And,
A new flashlight in that process.
A new flashlight.
Yeah.
And now's the time to rub your hands and say, okay,
mm-hmm.
bring it on. I want to see more about this and more and more.
I'm sure I will.
Is there any more about
that?
I'd like to use the spirit of inquiry with something that I've been looking at. I've talked a number of weeks ago in group, I think, about how I was watching uncharacteristic, even behaviors, actually, arise around this being that weren't intentional changes. I've just noticed them. I think the biggest one was not making lists.
So you notice behavior changes that related to this being that you actually hadn't set out to make a list to change these behaviors, and one of them was
list making.
Yeah.
And so it's continued to happen, and the thing that keeps happening, I can't remember the particular content, but again last night I realized that one of the intentions I had set, a lot of them around the year of deepening practice, that so many of those intentions are, there's big, big movement in those areas, and a lot of change, a lot of like that, and yet I'm not actually doing anything. Like, and I don't just mean that in the Zen sense. I mean, I'm really not. So this is the spirit of inquiry. There's this parallel story of like, not doing anything about any of that.
Mm-hmm.
And it includes things like, I'm not making any measurable goals, I'm not like that. And so there's this, there can be this sort of, okay, is this really great? You know, is this just, life is just happening and that's what's going on? Or is this, is there some very quiet, sort of invisible form of resistance of, with the not setting intentions, not actually that's not true. Mm-hmm. Set the intentions, but not creating specific goals and really like that.
So questioning, even though there's been observable change, questioning whether there's an invisible level of resistance to setting goals or to
actually to setting goals, because I do notice interestingly that. When it arises, and I don't know if it's a sub-personality who steps forward, like the person who really likes to do that, okay, you know, we talked about this a little on the retreat, I have a plan, you know, here's the plan, and she's really good at plans, you know, and like that. I notice some resistance to that, and as I say that out loud, I can sort of go with, okay, well, boy, I can have a lot of sympathy for that. That there's been so much proof over the years that there's nothing in that, nothing really truly heart-opening and good and expansive and present about that, that I could sympathize with resistance coming up to that when that arises. But I don't know. I mean, it could be that the entire form of resistance is this second-guessing that's happening, right? But the question is, like, so when, I can't even think of a particular example, which is interesting, but when there is that movement to like, okay, you know, I'm gonna whatever, you know, each there's like this, I don't wanna do that. And so it's just an interesting place to look of like, who's who and what's what, sort of, you know?
You're just really bringing the spirit of inquiry into this, and around resistance, and maybe you say a little bit more. It's still, there's change happening, but it sounds like someone is, what I'm getting what you say, that there's maybe more change that could happen, or a bit more directed change?
So I'm pretty sure, you know, I'm a one on the Enneagram, and I'm pretty sure I have a nine wing, and it feels, from what I understand of, you know, nine sort of characteristics, it feels like it can be very, very strong. And so I wonder sometimes if there's like this, okay, this is pretty good. This is pretty okay right now. Let's just stay here. That's kind of what I wonder. Yeah. There's a little bit of a, no, don't head straight at it.
Got it.
You know,
right. Yeah.
That's it.
I'm coasting, I'm cruising along there, and
I don't know how the intentions are happening, but they are. Yeah. So let's just look at the dogs
flying. But still, it sounds like, you know, not going to sleep with the whole thing, watching it.
Yeah.
And being open to the fact that there may be a level of resistance there is not real.
Yeah. And I think that's actually a good point. I think kind of a piece of it that would be helpful is, I think what can happen for me is actually this is really true because I've been in conversation with the guide a lot around these little places that this process hides of I'm going to, let's see how do I phrase it, still pretty new that I'm looking at it as a process, it just seems true and real, but I'm going to actively figure out, is the one part, right? I'm going to actively figure out how to do things right, ask a lot of questions, and before you even have a chance, you, whoever you is, right, have a chance to give me feedback, I'm gonna come in and ask for the feedback so I never get blindsided.
Yeah.
You know?
Ultimately, there's somebody still in the driver's seat.
In control.
Yeah.
And so I think it could, as we're talking, what I'm seeing is sort of this, oh, is there some level of resistance happening? That a, there could be that process happening of like, because the thing is, if there's some level of hidden unconsciousness, I'll run into it.
Exactly.
You know, exactly. I mean, it's just how it works.
Right.
As, you know, in life in general, but certainly being a monk at a monastery.
Right.
That's how it's set up.
Yeah.
You know, we've put ourselves in a situation where guaranteed we'll run into it. And so what I was just seeing with it is, boy, I could really just relax, have the spirit of inquiry in it, and know I'm going to run smack into it if I'm unconscious somewhere. And not have to protect in huge quotations against that happening.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
As if we could protect against that happening, you know.
Yeah. As if that's going to serve us.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I don't know, and what also keeps coming up for me is, and you probably looked at this too, is underlying beliefs about how a person, you know, if a person needs to, you know,
like
do a lot of work,
yeah,
or
be the agent,
be the agent
happening.
For
yes.
that transformation.
For sure.
Happening.
No, that's a good point. That's another piece of it, is that really, I mean, it's such a new orientation, but transitioning out of, well, I mean, surely I have to do something to do this, you know, and I'm not really doing anything, so I must be being lazy or something. I don't know, something must be wrong here.
Yeah. What you describe is just such a complete shift in orientation that, of course, you know, all kinds of questions are going to arise about what, you know, there's something I need to be doing here.
And, you know, it's funny, I think what I'm really getting in the conversation is that, you know, we never want to go to sleep. So, okay, so there's this completely new thing happening. You know, I set these intentions. They begin to happen seemingly without any agency on my part. And so not to go to that place of like, all right, all set now, you know.
Yeah. I don't have to do anything.
I don't have to
set intentions. And, you know,
go to sleep. And again, you know, if I did do that, not realizing I was doing that, I'd find out in a big hurry. Yeah. So, you know, it's all good.
It is all good.
I don't know. I'm just making it relate because I'm looking at this, but it has to do with resistance to frosted flakes.
Resistance to frosted flakes.
But this isn't slight resistance. So you know what? I've got these three small children. You know? And they're not small anymore. Okay, one's almost as big as I am. But anyway.
You have three children that are younger
three
than
children.
You.
I have noticed lately that I'm finding the willingness to look at, I not only have resistance to frosted flakes, to the idea of frosted flakes, but my whole physical body screams, we're going to die if we eat frosted flakes. And I comes in and, I mean, it's like a takeover inside. Not only does it make me panic, but then, if anybody were going to have frosted flakes, I think it would be really controlled. You know, there would be like this controlled environment of. And what I was looking at, as Jen was talking, was that it started out as an insight about healthy eating. So there was just a, wow, I really want to, you know, I have my first child, and I really want to do it this way. Because, wow, it feels really good to think about. But then ego comes in and takes it. And suddenly, you know, really over the last 13 years since birth of the first child, it was a really subtle thing around food. You know, they happen to have a dad who will let them do that kind of thing every now and then, and they have a lot of fun with it. But I actually can't enter into Fruit Loop and Frosted Flake fun because it's like the devil, you know, has just taken it and overdone it without my noting that that's what happened. Somebody inside said, but that's the right thing. You know, you know what's going to happen when they eat that stuff. You know, but it's not true. The story that it tells me actually isn't true.
So like so many things that start out with maybe an insight, like, you know, you had an insight that you wanted to provide the best care you could for these children. And then over time, it has been taken by condition. And, you know, it's been kind of subtle. But now it's become, you know, it sounds almost rigid in and how it's how that initial good-hearted intention to provide good care for the children is now like, you know.
Well, it's interesting because what it feels like it seeped in without me knowing it, and it really has me almost from the inside of my brain. Because sometimes it can feel like it's hovering, you know, but this one, this piece of content, this small, tiny content, is like it got it and it embedded it and it's got me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's got me. And it could be anything. I'm sure there are other pieces of content, but the thing that I am most fascinated about is that it's really, really got me.
It's really got me. There's just no opening for Frosted Flakes.
So here's my plan this week, because I just really thought, I'll go to the grocery store and I'll get one of those packages where they have all the unhealthy, you know, that I grew up on, right?
Yes.
Fruit Loops, Cocoa Puffs, all the ones that you would never even have. You know, just thinking about it, I can't breathe. So I thought, I'll get these boxes. But that's the best I could do, like to buy a whole box, a big box, and just let them dump it and eat. So I thought, I'll try and do levels of going up against conditioning. Now perhaps I should just get the big box. But to sit there, you know, it would be like sitting through an itch on the cushion. I mean, I will just have to hold on, and everything in me will want to go unconscious. You know, I'll like have to think about things or not watch or... And then the other thought that I thought of was that, okay, maybe I should, like, serve myself. You know, like, at first I thought, well, what I'll do is I'll let them, because they want to try it, you know, they're just kids. And so I thought, well, really what would be fun for me to go up against conditioning would be to do it with them. I mean, I get on a trampoline with them. But to eat frosted, you know, my whole system, really it feels like I would die. Like something, it has me so, I will die, you know, But it projects on me, and I believe it, that I'm going to die. But really, I'm going to like have a hypoglycemic attack and keel over. And, I mean, it gets me that.
It really gets you with this particular piece of content that, yeah. and actually to bring this substance into the house and
substance. It's like alcohol, it's a drug, yeah. Frosted Flakes substance. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not so, you know, I use that as an example, but the process is something I've definitely been watching. Kind of a way of doing things, and then all of a sudden there's a subtle shift that I don't quite see. The Frosted Flakes is the extreme. You know, it's really got me on that one. But the process of how it got me, I didn't recognize until it was too late for Frosted Flakes. But I see it with a lot of different things. And part of what's helping me see it is, you know, I have an older person now. The other people, and the 9-year-old and the 5-year-old still believe me. The 13-year-old was like, come on, it's Frosted Flakes, Mom. You know, it's just like... So there is, you know, before there wasn't really anybody in the house to say.
So this has come up, and you're seeing it as an opportunity to really watch conditioning as you do this?
Yes, because it isn't the Frosted Flakes, let's face it.
Exactly.
It's the process of how the heck did that become so extreme?
Yeah.
I mean, from a rational perspective, I grew up on Frosted Flakes and butter sugar sandwiches in West Texas.
Yeah.
And I'm fine. Sherry has reminded me of that many times. And so, but it does something to my system. It takes, and how that happens is really kind of fuzzy because it goes, you know, it seems so close. I don't see the middle stuff between the car and the train really. It really seems stuck together right now a bit. So, you know, I keep watching. And I think for me, other day kind of things when I don't see this clearly. So like maybe Monday we'll try across the lakes, and Tuesday we'll go back to, you know, egg and holy bagels. And then Wednesday, you know, in the sense of when it's not clear whether it's conditioning or not kind of thing in this layer, but it's kind of a play that I think I'll do.
So, yeah, and as you say, it doesn't have any, it's not particularly the frosted flakes. So, you know, I'm just wondering if you're bringing the spirit of inquiry into the other places where the same sort of...
this one happens to be really clear because the sensations in the body are obvious. Mm-hmm. It's not quite as clear sometimes. I think that's how I get to the... strong sensations,
because
I don't see that first view.
You don't see the catalyst.
So for me, sometimes it's easier to bring the spirit of inquiry when I'm having almost a panic attack, because it's clear.
Right.
No other alternative. But here, bringing the spirit of inquiry earlier seems a little more tricky, because I'm not even aware that it's going on as much. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So early on, the sensations are not as uncomfortable, so to speak.
This is a really strong trigger, so it's a little bit easier for you to follow the body sensations and the whole process with this particular trigger.
I think so.
Okay.
There's an in between. So in the beginning, it seems like I can follow, and then it's really bad. There's this in between that I seem to go unconscious with. Mm-hmm. So I'm going along, getting up and feeling my feet on the ground, meditating and feeling pretty present and present, you know. And then there's a, I don't know, I'll have to report back.
Yeah.
There's a space in between where I fall asleep. But it's hard to be in a spirit of inquiry because I'm sleeping.
Yeah.
I'm not as awake to inquire, so
yeah.
to speak.
Yeah.
But I'll
It's something good to watch, and you know, I don't know whether it has anything to do with anything, but it reminds me when my children were young, I played with this food thing too, and one day I just served them powdered sugar donuts for dinner by candlelight, because you know, to just shake it up sometimes and to just work through all of those notions, and it doesn't mean that you're going to, you know, that I didn't serve them powdered sugar donuts by candlelight every day for the rest of their lives, but, you know, every once in a while, you know, just to do that and see what happens.
Yeah, and that we have a process that we can, it's fun to do that, and I can watch at the same time, get really familiar with.
Right.
That thing, you know, that keeps me from having fun doing that.
Yeah. And I think that's the important part, to watch and, yeah, to see what that is that keeps you from having fun.
I'll go home and tell the kids. Okay, the mantra was specifically tonight, donuts by candlelight.
And what's interesting is projection, you know, as adults, they thought that I did that one night because we were too poor to have anything but donuts. So, you know, you just never know. It's just all, it's interesting. All of it's interesting. So, thank you. Alex.
That's really interesting. I thought it was very helpful because I think I might have the same thing going, the same content even. There is no room for you at all in any of this. You know, I think it's just the conversation starting up about it, being the flag for it. I wish I could be as diligent about this kind of drawing a line and saying, absolutely not.
Absolutely not. That image of the camp and the retreat of like grabbing the lapels yes. of conditioning and go, no.
Shaking it. Yeah. Absolutely not. And it's almost like I remember that story that Sherry told about, you know, her teacher saying something about people being concerned about their bladders and not being concerned at all about where their attention goes. Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to try to enlist this person for this kind of attitude about, because there, I mean, some certain things I have a sense about like unclear or harmful, and it's not even that there's anything wrong with going down a path of, because I'm actually exploring what harmful is, you know.
It's right? Like exploration.
I don't know. And, but I can only tell from what my experience is. And to be afraid of going down a particular track because I'm afraid of not knowing about what's going to happen, I'm wondering about whether or not that's actually helpful. Because I know, for myself, it feels like having just gotten to a place of suffering and up with it has been a choice. You know, of course, the other choice is intelligence as well, which is, I think, what that line being drawn and saying, no, is all about. You know, because once I found out, there's no sense in going back down that ramp again, because I know where it's going.
Right.
You know, I know that if, you know, to use a metaphor of food, I know that if I do this, you know, chances are pretty good that, you know, having powdered sugar donuts by candlelight or not candlelight every night could be harmful.
Right. But as you say, you know, to again, to bring the spirit of inquiry yes. into it, to not just take this, you know, conditionings feeding you information about things, but to actually, you know, grab it by the lapel, say no, and to watch your own experience. And you know, and once you have that and you know where this road is heading, there's no need to go down it.
And it always points out some kind of deprivation as a result of that. Yeah. And what I've been finding is that whole new worlds open up. You know, it's like the monastery with our diet. You know, what we eat, it's like, for the longest time, it was like the question, because I knew what we were eating before. And the question was, well, if you're not eating this, then what the heck are you eating? You know, it's like, what do you eat? What is good? Mm-hmm. And it opened up a whole exploration. Like, well, what is food? What is nutrition? And what? And the same thing with you know, practice too. It's like, well, if I don't sit in front of the TV 24/7, what do you do? What do you hear? And it's like, wow, just to have an open mind and explore and find out, you know, and have an experience of what else is there. It right. fills up very quickly with really great things, and that's what, you know, that's
my experience. So being in that place of openness and let life, you know, bring in some options that may never have, you know, been available, because we're in this, it's like, you know, we get in these ruts of just, this is a particular thing, and this is, you know, this is how we eat, and this is,
exactly.
you know.
It's very clear cut, this, and
it's that
black and white.
It's that going to sleep again, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's choosing going to sleep rather than paying attention to our experience. Mm-hmm. We know it will choose the conditioned belief over our experience.
Exactly.
And it's just a process of that's where the know is helpful, and that's where just looking and checking it out, finding out for ourselves.
And, you know, what comes through, as you say that, too, is just the freedom in that, you know? It just opens up
yeah.
untold possibilities in a life
yeah.
to be in that attitude of exploration and watching and being awake and observing and, you know, gosh,
yeah.
anything's possible from that place.
Anything's possible from that place, yes. And everything that I was afraid of, exploring was the thing that was kind of kind of keep it in the same old familiar. Yeah. I only know this, I only know this, and why are you messing with this? This is the first step. Why are you messing with this? This is, this is not providing happiness, but at least we know this. And then to veer off, use the expression, the exit ramp. I love that image from this retreat. To use the exit ramp to see what's there. And the possibility. And then just touch into that and watch how the issue will scream about that.
God, no one must be heading in the right direction here.
That's it.
And just, and yeah, it keeps, I keep being hit with the kindness in that too.
Yeah.
The kindness for the being.
Yeah.
To go through life and with that spirit of inquiry instead of the rigid chains of.
Yeah. It's to be stuck in that same place forever.
I'm really appreciating the conversation. And the thing that I was seeing that feels like it weaves through every conversation we've had this morning is that if we are to make an assumption, assume that the being is good, and so I go back to, I mean, I can relate to every content, the sugar, the obsessive thinking, the, you know, it's funny, I just blanked on what mine was. Something, I had some thoughts going. But to assume that they're goodness, and so, okay, like I love the thing about, you know, so if the being is going to obsessive thinking, if the being, you know, if we're drawn to sugar, what is that?
Yeah.
You know, and instead of having to go, you know, what conditioning wants us to do is like, oh, we could explore doing the thing that, you know, isn't really what we want to do, but to look under that, how can we meet that need? Okay, I want sugar. I want to think about this stuff. What? What's going on with that? It feels like that's such a great spirit of inquiry. And there's so often there's some way that life meets that need without that content that we don't really want to go to because it isn't what we want for ourselves.
So just looking at what the need is that's underlying that desire for sweetness or desire for change or desire for
to get away from the voices or,
yeah.
And then there's always some way to do that really is truly what we want.
Mm-hmm.
This is very great.
It's a very good place to bring the spirit of inquiry, as you said. And then, you know, we can provide that. The only person that can provide that for those parts of us that have that need in a way that is kind and life for me.
And it takes, at least in my experience, it takes practice.
Yeah.
What about this? That wasn't it.
Yeah.
That didn't feel so good.
Yeah.
Okay, well that's all right. How about this?
Yeah.
You know,
recognize that there's someone who doesn't want to speak because I have this new device in my mouth that makes it very difficult to talk in the way in which I'm accustomed to talking. It's like I have all this.
So your speech is different.
It's
makes
different,
it
and I someone I recognize would prefer not to speak at all because it is. Mm-hmm. But I don't know how long this is going to be here, so I guess I better not have it shut me up.
Another opportunity for practice.
That's right. But what I was, what I've been particularly drawn to in the last few days since I read it is that quote that's on the note board right now. That starts out about the invisible pounding and weaving of our, now I've forgotten the next word, something beliefs, of our invisible pounding and weaving of our,
has it been?
Well, I was just going to say, I can't remember actually, we might want to not reveal the particular content of the retreat and just talk, I can't remember if that was pertinent to the retreat, but anyway, just so everyone listening at home doesn't have the surprise wreck if they come to the retreat. But
anyway, there's that quote about the invisible pounding and weaving of our
conditioned beliefs.
Conditioned beliefs, I'm like, whatever. And But what, when I don't remember the rest of the quote, and I have no idea what the context of it was because I wasn't on the retreat. I just noticed the quote, and I particularly was taken by those the phrase because partly the invisible part and the pounding and the weaving, because when the beliefs that I have examined and am examining, because they come up, are the ones that are pounding. You know, they're the ones that are like getting me, you know? And they're woven, they're so woven into who and how I am, you know? And they become visible because I'm in the spirit of inquiry about them, you know? And, but what I've been playing with and curious about is that, so those have become visible, but what about the invisible ones? Now, what about the ones that are still weaving their way in through me, and so underlying the ones that have become visible, that I still don't see them, but that are holding those visible ones in place.
So looking at beliefs that may be holding the more visible beliefs in place, but not bringing attention to, or not even aware of possibly having these beliefs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because what I've been seeing is I've been noticing how certain ones come back around. You know, they have a life. You know, I sort of see through them, and then I kind of move beyond them, and then lo and behold, a year later, there they are again. You know, and I'm saying, whoa, this is very familiar. And then it's like, what is there that makes that one so hard to, you know?
So what belief is there supporting that recurring belief that makes it very hard to let it go
or to be essentially to be controlled by it again, you know, to think one seen through it, to think, oh yes, I can see how I suffer over that and I don't need to anymore, and then bang, there it is again, and I'm feeling like, you know, oh, I'm feeling that way again, and this is very familiar, and I thought we were done with this. So I don't know, it's just that particular, I don't know, phrasing about the beliefs that way really
has opened it up to
the spirit of inquiry to a much larger, you know, vision. Like not so narrowly maybe looking at this thing I'm looking at, but you know what is the bigger container that's holding all that in place.
And being, it sounds like it being available for life to drop in insights about that, or just to see what is there to be seen.
I also really like the phrase that was introduced earlier in the discussion about the mental flu. I have to remember that one, because it feels like I have it right now. It's like that's a good description for what I've got right now. Because there's just been a kind of a barrage of, you know, thoughts being expressed in this mind about how life isn't what it should be, you know, it doesn't even matter the content of what it's throwing at me, but it's just, you know, stories about what life looks like and what it should look like and what things that are coming up are going to be like, or, you know, there's just a, you know, it's like a great big bowl of stew with a lot of ingredients and most of them painful.
It sounds like based on things turning out a particular way or looking a particular way, or
it's related to what I was just talking about, because it's looking at the past and looking at the future and looking at the present through particular lenses that all come from some bunch of assumptions and beliefs that I'm not aware that I'm looking through.
Yeah, it just seems so like who you are, not aware that it's that your particular experience is being colored by a particular system of beliefs and assumptions.
Yeah, and a big part of them, I mean, the particular content of a big part of them are around about what I do with my time, and how there are certain things that people do in the world with their time that are valuable, and certain things people do in the world that are not valuable, and the ones I'm doing right now are the not valuable ones.
Uh-huh. So it's bringing up a lot of beliefs around what's valuable activity and not valuable activity.
Yeah.
Good to look at, you know.
Yeah.
All those assumptions and beliefs.
That's right.
I love that mental flu thing too. I've seen there's a I've seen flow charts for physical illness, you know, like pain won't go away, blood, you know, blood won't stop, you know, things that, what's the next action? I could see the same thing for mental, you know, obsessive thinking goes longer than 1 hour,
recurs.
It recurs, certain, you know, the end is mental flu. You know. Practice required. That's great. Thanks.
I appreciated the kind of what's going on with belief circling back around and all that, and mental flu and all of that seems all relevant. But so I years ago, I did a lot of work with fear in a really big way, and I thought it was done, and I was just never going to, you know, and I know these things just, you know, I actually take a lot of comfort. I think it's maybe in Sweet Zen, you know, Sherry talking something about, you know, we just, if we get anything going about things coming back around, then, you know, we're going to, it's going to be kind of rough. But instead, if it's like, oh, hello, you're back again, or whatever, that was kind of what I took from that reading. So, you know, here I am again, looking at fear. And it's feeling really interesting because I feel, it's feeling like right at this point when I'm experiencing someone, like I've been looking at sort of being more the grown-up and somebody being able to really come into this life and have gifts to share and come from a more centered place and have sort of this grown-up perspective to offer and feel really good and heart-opened in that and kind of confident in those things. And then right at that same point that's strengthening, there's this thing that just makes me feel like, you know, takes me to, you know, 1.5 and helpless and so afraid. And so it's probably, you know, there's probably a lot to look at there of the timing of that, you know.
So just seeing that as, you know, it sounds like more in touch with your heart, your authentic nature.
Uh-huh.
Also having an experience of just, you know, head-on conditioning, just, you know, it sounds like, you know, really talking to a really, really young part of yourself.
Yes.
And having a whole lot of fear arise.
Yeah.
And then
just kind of looking at how to work with that. So the particular content right now is the snake. So, you know, like, you know, it sounded like there were three snake sightings from what I could gather from what was shared in the group. So I was like, okay, oh my God. You know, the conditioning going crazy with that. And then, I don't know if it's, so there was also the image of the laughing Buddha. I don't know if that's not to be shared. But I love that idea. Like, my projection is a laughing Buddha just kind of goes around. And there's probably, my projection too, is there's probably an intelligence with that laughing Buddha, like not just, you know, stepping right on a snake, like being aware if there's a snake there, but also being able to be relaxed and open and having a good time. And sort of the other thing that keeps coming in too is in that thy will be done place. I mean, there is the intelligence of just, you know, not to step right on a snake kind of thing, but also, you know, if
I project that a laughing Buddha is like, you know, if I'm meant to go with a snake bite, then I'm meant to go with a snake bite, and I'm not going to miss out on the fun and relaxed and open life experience that's available. And that's what I want to practice with myself, because, you know, right now I'm like every time I have to like step onto a path, it's like, you know, or God forbid it's a little off the path and I'm, you know, like you have to, you know, jump the whatever something someplace, or, you know, it's like, oh my gosh. So I'm so like in the grip and I'm not relaxed and I'm not having fun, you know, so I mean, that's probably fine. I'm trying to really mentor myself when I walk to my little hermitage path, you know, sometimes if there's nobody around, they'll just, you know, hello, it's okay, here we go, and, you know, I'm coming through, I don't mean any harm to anyone, you know, I'm doing all these, so, you know, maybe that's the path to eventually, you know, kind of get to where I'd love to be with it, but just watching this whole thing, and yeah.
Yeah, just watching this whole process and working with fear again, and
yeah,
having it come around again, and, you know, like you said, if you probably count on it coming around, these issues coming around and around.
Yes.
And you know, giving this, knowing that you want to, you know, having this image of being able to enjoy life.
Yeah.
And being able to enjoy life, and also being, it doesn't mean that you don't disregard danger, or, you know, but
yeah.
You enjoy life and you don't step in front of a speeding train, but you know, but yeah. To and what you're looking at now too is that not to imagine the speeding train when there is none. You
know? Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And to how to be in that place of awareness and joy, and also, I mean, what that brings us to is a place of being more aware and more ready if something does present itself, you know, that you're there. But it sounds like you're mentoring this little kid, talking to her, and, you know, it is an exploration. It is an exploration. And I don't know, for me, I know that I can get caught up in, well, I did this and it didn't work, you know, and then and just getting into fear about, you know, it just seems to reinforce the fear. But like you said, just practicing and having acceptance for where you are with it right now. It seems like a very kind thing to do for this person.
Yeah, I think so. Just go down the path with as much breath as I can, and all of that kind of stuff.
And have you worked with recording and listening?
Yeah. All of a sudden it's like blank, but yes, I have been recording, but, you know, maybe to keep working with that too and see what I can see about it. I mean, what I keep getting to is just, this is coming up with all different content every place, and it does keep somebody just in that, you know, this is how the response is to life kind of place, instead of possible.
Yeah.
Like I said, sort of juxtaposed with right when there is a place of somebody really stepping out there and enjoying life in a more relaxed way and doing things that are considered scary by the system and all of that. So I think conditioning is just looking for any angle of where it can, you know, grab the person back, and it's having some success right now, but you know, it's just good to.
And what just came up in is that, you know, you might want to make a recording that you find particularly reassuring and reminds you of, like you said, you're having this awareness of your authentic self and what that's like, and you might want to listen to that. And as you have to go home to your hermitage at night, and as you're walking, you know, in those places that might be particularly frightening, to just plug that in and listen.
What was said earlier about
just recently of really seeing my innocence. Mm-hmm. And I watched this process go, I think it's a process that is a familiar one that's usually more drawn out, but I saw it sort of in quick succession, where I started having some sensations, and the first thing was just denial of the sensations, just this like self-denial, and then it was like an acceptance of the sensations, but then the impulse was, this is something I have to hide. Mm-hmm. And then the impulse was, no, I have to communicate about it, but it was coming from a place of fear, like as though it was going to be some kind of confession of wrongdoing. Mm-hmm. And then what I just saw was, what is this process about? I have done absolutely nothing wrong.
And you're already judged and hanged. And,
yeah, and it was just like an experience of just like, wow, all of that, like as if the underlying starting point was guilt of some kind. And I just saw that was just completely unfounded. And it was just like, just really freeing, and I could just see broad application for that.
Wow, so just really seeing the underlying good or innocence of this person.
Yeah.
And that whole story, how unnecessary it was, and based on an untruth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That person was guilty before she even started the whole thing.
It's just one of those experiences of just really seeing it clearly, just that there's an innocent person that all of this is going on.
Wow, that's great. One of the beautiful benefits of practicing is to see that innocence and beauty.